Bibles there, if you'd like to open up. We're continuing on talking about faith. And I'm sure that you've noticed, but the world talks a lot about faith. Not the Christian faith or the religious faith, but certainly it talks about faith, not in a biblical sense, but in a very humanistic sense. Faith is portrayed as a positive feeling. It's a positive feeling. It's something we can lay hold of. We can have faith in ourselves. And I think the kind of secular faith, worldly faith, is more about faith in ourselves, whereas biblical faith is very different. If we have a humanistic type of faith, then it's about developing our inner self, our help, our inner health. It's about looking internally. It's inward focused. But biblical faith, Christian faith, is very different. It's focused outward. And the object of faith is not ourselves. The object of Christian faith, of biblical faith, is, of course, God. So as worldly faith looks inwards and focuses on self, biblical faith looks outwards and focuses on God. And the faith that the writer of Hebrews is speaking about, we know already from last week that the object of our faith is God. It's Jesus Christ and all that he has accomplished for us. And last week we had a look at that. Peter gave us a definition from the beginning of Hebrews about what faith is. Hebrews chapter 11, verses 1 to 3, where the writer of Hebrews says this: "Now faith is the confidence in what we hope for and the assurance of what we do not see. And this is what the ancients were commended for. By faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what's seen was not made out of what was visible." So there's an element where faith looks back. It looks back to what God has done. It looks back to the creation. For us, it looks back to the cross of Jesus Christ. It looks back to the outpouring of the Holy Spirit, to the birth of the church. But there's also an element where faith looks forward, and we see that in verse 6. "And without faith, it's impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly or diligently seek him." So there's this sense that he rewards those. We're looking for this reward. So faith doesn't just look backwards, it looks forward. And that's a key element of faith. Faith's not just a feeling that makes us optimistic or successful. It's not just being certain about anything. Christian faith is being certain about God, who he is, what he says, what he's done, and what he's promised that he's going to do. So this certainty comes by not focusing on ourselves, but the certainty and certitude of faith, Christian faith, comes from the object of the faith, focusing on God. What you put your faith in is what makes you strong. And if you put it in yourself, well, I don't know about you, but I'm in trouble. And I would think most of us are in trouble. But if the object of our faith is eternal, if it's all powerful, if it's all knowing, if it's ever present, if it's all loving, if it's all goodness, and of course we're talking about God, then our faith has enormous value. And it's not about the amount of faith that we have, but it's rather who are you relying on, who are you putting your faith in? Because he is the one who's reliable. He is the one that we can trust. So the degree and level of hope that we have then as Christians, that's directly proportionate to the amount of faith that we have. And of course, that's determined by who our faith is in. And so the writer of Hebrews, remember, he's writing to these Christians, these Jewish Christians who are under persecution. They're thinking of going back to Judaism. And right up to now, the first 10 verses, he has just, you know, just labored the point, Jesus is better. He's better than the Old Testament prophets. He's better than Moses. He's better than Joshua. Jesus is better than anything that you've ever had before. So don't walk away. Place your faith in him. And what the writer of Hebrews is trying to encourage them with, he knows that the persecution is going to get worse. And he says, if you can hold on in hope, hold on to the faith that you have, you will most definitely survive. And the message hasn't changed. Did you read my message this morning? You didn't? Okay, I just want to get out that. Maureen's little word that she had before, she didn't read my message, because that's really where I end up in this message, is that word that you had for all of us, talking about our faith, you know, for the miraculous, our faith for the things that are happening around us. Last week with Peter, I think we saw a bit of a progression of faith. You know, we talked about the faith of Abel and the faith of Enoch, and we nearly got to Noah, and we won't quite get to him today. But when you look at Abel and Enoch and Noah, all the greats from the Hall of Faith that we looked at last week, you can see a clear progression. You know, it's what's faith all about? Well, it's about, you know, Abel was the blood sacrifice, which points towards Jesus. And so our faith begins when we recognize our need for the sacrifice of Jesus. Then we move on to Enoch, and we heard that he walked with God. So it begins with Jesus, and then it continues on in relationship. It's not good enough just to pray a prayer once or to put up your hand once. You've got to continually walk with Jesus in relationship as Enoch did. And of course, when you come to Noah, I mean, the story of Noah is radical obedience. And so you can see that progression of faith from, you know, coming to Christ, from developing a relationship with Jesus, and then living lives of radical obedience. And then when we get to Abraham, which is who we're looking at today, we move from, I guess, the progression of faith to the nature of faith. You know, when the writer of Hebrews starts talking about Abraham, who's the big daddy of faith, let me tell you that. Abraham is synonymous with faith and what faith is and what faith is all about. He is the ultimate expression in the Bible of the faithful person, of the person that we are to look to. Paul says in Romans 4 that Abraham is the father of all who have faith. He's our father. He's the big daddy. And we're going to look at him today. And as we look at him, we'll see, as the writer of Hebrews starts to unpack who Abraham is, we're going to see how faith works. And we're going to see how faith works best. And we could open up Hebrews 11 and we could do a year series on Hebrews 11. And you could never exhaust the richness and the depth of everything that's in this one chapter. It's called the Hall of Faith. It's the chapter of faith. And so we're going to look at it today. And what we're looking at for specifically is how faith works best. And the first thing we see that faith works best when we take God at His word. Faith works best when we take God at His word. And let's begin to look at Hebrews 11, verse 8. By faith, Abraham was, when called to go to a place he'd never later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he didn't know where he was going. So he gets the promise. He doesn't know what it's going to look like. He doesn't know where it's going. But what does he do? He takes God at His word. You know, God's already called him. So, you know, how was Abraham called? Well, to understand that, we have to go back to Genesis 12, the first three verses of Genesis 12, which is like the great commission of the Old Testament in some ways. And when we see that, we see that Abraham's in this place called Ur, probably in Iraq, somewhere southern Iraq. It would have been located in that area. So God calls Abraham. He's living in a pagan city. He's worshipping pagan gods. All his friends and all his family are there. And God calls him. And we read this in Genesis 12. The Lord said to Abraham, go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land that I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. And we see here Abraham's immediate obedience. You know, he follows, he takes God at His word. God calls, he hears it, and Abraham has this deep trust and faith in God, and he goes. John MacArthur says this in speaking of this verse in Hebrews. Too many weddings on at the moment. I've got to talk too much. And then I just keep telling my wife what to do too. Makes it hard. I think I'll lose my voice by this time next week. Someone might be ready to preach. Someone else might have to preach next week. Ben, what are you doing? I just saw you over there. I reckon you'd be good. John MacArthur says this. I'm sure you will. John MacArthur says this about Abraham. He says, as soon as he understood what God was saying, he started packing. I love it. As soon as he understood what God was saying, he started packing. It was instant obedience. It may have taken several days. It may have taken several months. But to make the final preparation for the trip, it began straight away. In Abraham's mind, he's already on his way. And he said there was like an immediate obedience. Why? Because he's taking God at His word. And faith works best when we take God at his word. Faith stalls, I think, and runs aground, you know, when we doubt God and when we don't move forward. And, you know, there were times that Abraham stumbled. So I'm not saying, hey, we all need to be like Abraham. Because when we look at all of these great heroes in the Hall of Faith, and you look a little bit closely at their lives, you see that they all had challenges. They all had issues. Abraham was nowhere near perfect, even though he's known as the father of faith. And it's good to remind ourselves of that. You know, sometimes it's easy as a preacher to get up and say, we need to be like this person, we need to be like that person. And it's an easy thing to say, but when you actually start to dig down into some of their lives, you think, hang on, I don't know that I really want to be too much like that person. He certainly wasn't perfect. He didn't measure up. And Abraham's faith stalled. Sarah's faith stalled on a number of occasions. On two occasions, Abraham lacked faith in God so much, he said to his wife, I want you to pretend to be my sister. Because if they think you're my wife, you are so darn good looking, they're going to kill me and they're going to take you away. And so he got his wife to deceive those around them. You know, he stumbled. You know, when his wife came to him and said, here's my maidservant, Hagar, we're going to have a child through Hagar. You know, he shouldn't have done that. It created a whole lot of problems for the Middle East, you know, when he did that. It was the start of a whole lot of drama. So there were times that Abraham really stumbled. And the fact then that someone like Abraham makes it to the Hall of Faith should be incredibly encouraging to us today. Like, if he can make it in after doing that, hey, there's hope for all of us. And as you go through all of these great figures, you know, you talk about David, you know, a man after God's own heart. Well, he just committed adultery and killed someone. You know, there's hope for us today if we have just a little bit of faith. And with the Lord in our life, you know, the most important thing is that we continue to walk in faith. You know, if the Lord comes back, how is he going to find us? You know, if we die, shuffle off this mortal coil, how will the Lord find us in faith? If he comes back suddenly, where will he find us? You see, it doesn't matter how many times you've failed, but it matters that at the end you're standing in faith. It doesn't matter how you start the race or how you stumble, but it matters how you finish the race. And I think that's one of the big lessons from Abraham as well. What's important today is that we're trusting in God's ability to do all that he said he would. What's important today is that we're taking God at his word. And I have to ask myself this question. Am I taking God at his word in my life today? Am I listening to what he says? Is my obedience immediate? Or do I want to hang on to some things in my life that I don't fully want to let go of at the moment because I like toying with them, I enjoy them? And if I'm doing that, I'm not taking God at his word. Take God at its word. I mean, it sounds so simple. And this is what I love about preaching. I can just throw things out there. It's so easy. It just rolls off the preacher's lips. Take God at his word. It's such an easy thing to say. But then I have to go home and try and do it. And then I realize how hard it is. And if I'd realized that when I was preaching, well, might have been a little bit more humble. In Mark chapter 4, there's an amazing story where Jesus has been ministering and he's tired. He's a bit worn out and he says to the boys, let's go in the boat. And he says in verse 35, he said, let's go over to the other side. We're going to jump in the boat and we're going over to the other side. And then Jesus, as you do when you're God, you can just lie down and have a nap at any time. He goes for a kip in the boat. And so he's having his sleep and then this massive storm kind of comes up. And the disciples, they're starting to, we're going to die. And they say in verse 38, don't you care that we're going to drown? I mean, the Son of God is there in the boat with them. Don't you care that we're going to drown? And of course, you know, Jesus gets up and Jesus is thinking, what are you asking this question for? Haven't I already told you that we're going across to the other side? And immediately when the waves and the storm comes, what do? We start doubting him. Don't you care that we're going to drown? We're going to die. And Jesus says, do you still have no faith? And I wonder how many times in my life Jesus has asked me that question. I've already told you we're going to the other side. I've already told you it's going to be okay. And then, oh Lord, you're trying to kill me here? You're going to drown me? And he says to me, do you still have faith? They didn't take Jesus at his word.
He'd already promised them where they were going. And the writer of Hebrews knows that it's easy to have faith when the sun's shining, there's a gentle breeze taking you across the Sea of Galilee to the resort on the other side. It's fantastic. But when the storm comes, when the wind's howling down the channel, if we take God at his word, then we will hear the voice of Christ over the storm. And I think that's the message that the writer of Hebrews is trying to get across to this little group of Jewish Christians. You know, I don't know about you, but sometimes I read the word and I think, well, if God spoke to me like he spoke to Abraham, that'd be different. You know, if I could hear God speak like that, well, you know, I wouldn't doubt like Abraham did. I wouldn't have any of those troubles, you know, because God would have spoken to me. I kind of looked at that passage, you know, the three verses in Genesis 12. 66 words in English. Less in Hebrew. Hebrews are a lot more succinct with their words. But in English, in most translations, it's about 66 words that he spoke to Abraham before Abraham, you know, picked up his kit and walked. If God would only speak to me like that. Well, do you know? He's given you 783,000 words and 137. 783, 137 words from Genesis to Revelation. I counted them on the weekend, Brad. Through Google. How much has God spoken to us? We've got complete revelation of the history of the people of God speaking with people, of God speaking into our lives. And we've got to learn to, if we're going to move forward in God, if we're going to have that faith that pleases God, then we have to take God at his word. And his word says, I'll never leave you or forsake you. His word says that nothing can separate us from his love. His word tells us what to do, to love God with all your heart and soul and mind, and to love your neighbor as yourself. His word tells us where to go. Go into all the world with the gospel and make disciples. His word tells us to be devoted to one another in love. There's so much that he's already spoken to me about, but I want to sit here and think, yeah, well, if he's really serious, I'll hear it. But he is really serious. That's why he's given us the miracle of his word, that we can open up this book at any time of the day, and God can speak to us in the same way that he spoke to Abraham. Abraham took God at his word, and he left the security of all that he had, of all that was happening there. He left his family, he left his people, he left his culture, he left all those great fast food shops that they would have had there, and he went out in this incredible walk of faith on the basis of what God says. You know, 9 years ago, when Maureen and I felt that God was telling us that we were to go, and, you know, a lot of things happened, and we weren't sure. Sometimes we were sure. Some days we were sure. Some days we weren't. And I think the day I remember when we left Nexus Church and we're driving down the driveway, I wasn't sure then. A couple of days later, I remember walking up the beach, you know, for a couple of months and thinking, what's going to happen? Where are we going to go? You know, what's going to happen in 12 months? I haven't got a job. I haven't got money. What's going to happen? And it's quite a scary thing. But we felt that God had spoken to us. But then in the natural, who plants a church at 55? You're too old then to do that. But I felt God had called us. And we had some prophetic words and we had things like that, and we felt God spoke to us, you know, through the word. But we had no idea then. But I look back now, I stand here and look at this. This is the fruit of that faith. Now, I'm not holding myself up as anyone. You know, I've got it wrong many times. And I went ahead of God many times. I left the best paid job I ever had once to go and become a missionary in Wales. It would have been great. I could have said boyo and all that stuff, and would have come back with a Welsh accent. It would have been fantastic. But I got it wrong. I left the job, and then, you know, a couple of days later, it all fell through, and then I'm standing there unemployed again. I've made a heap of mistakes. But, you know, even if you make a mistake, even if you step out and make a mistake on God, you know that when we stand before him on that day, he's going to have a chuckle and we're going to say, well, Lord, we thought it was you and we jumped, which is better than thinking it's him and not doing anything. Hey, and maybe there's people here today, who knows? God's calling you to make, you know, a giant step, maybe God's calling someone to the mission field or some ministry or into a particular occupation or a job. You know, a really good friend of mine many years ago, a really talented, smart man, felt that God called him to be a prison guard. And he went and he became a prison guard. And he takes his faith in there. He loves the prisoners. He has a bit of trouble sometimes with the other guards because they don't understand what he's doing. But he felt that this was his mission field. This was his call. And he was obedient to that. And the Lord's really blessed him. But most of the time, when God calls us to do something, it's never going to be something magnificent or something great, but it's obeying and trusting God in the everyday and the small things. And I think when we come to that place of taking God at his word, the word that we have, the revelation that we have, then we'll find out that faith works best when we take God at his word. The other thing is that faith works best when it's firmly anchored in the future. And we see this in the next verses in Hebrews 11, verses 9 to 10. You with me? It's going okay? Okay, I'm a bit dry again. I think I need some more water. Just talk amongst yourselves for a moment, not for too long, but the Rabbitohs got beaten last night. I'm a bit depressed today, so I've got to over-preach a bit. Yeah, well, no one likes Canberra, so that's okay. If only Jesus was playing for a team. Yeah. And it would be the Rabbitohs if he was here. So Hebrews 11, verses 9 to 10. By faith, this is talking about Abraham, by faith he made his home in the promised land like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward. Where was he looking? He's looking forward. He was looking forward to the city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. You know, the interesting thing, neither Abraham, Isaac, or Jacob ever took possession of the promised land. The promise is there, but they never saw it. They're always looking forward. They're looking forward to the future. Their faith is anchored in the future. And for their whole lives, their faith was anchored there. Abraham, he's looking forward to what? The city of God. He's looking forward to the promises of God. He's looking forward to taking possession of something. He's looking forward to Jesus. That's what Abraham's looking forward to. And he lived his life out, his whole life, as did Isaac and Jacob, with their eyes firmly fixed on the future. And we see that in the next verses in 13 and 16. All of these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. Their faith is anchored in the future. Admitting that they were foreigners and strangers on earth, people who say such things show that they are what? They're looking for a country of their own. It's something in the future. If they'd been thinking of the country they'd left, then they would have had the opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God's not ashamed to be called their God, and he has prepared a city for them. Anchoring our faith in the future means a couple of things. It means that we recognize that we're all a little bit strange. We're strangers. You know, Peter says that we're foreigners and exiles. This isn't your home. You're just passing through. I've done a lot of weddings. I've done a lot of funerals. I've never seen a hearse with a luggage rack on the roof or a trailer. We're not taking anything with us. This is it. We're passing through. Paul says that our citizenship is in heaven. We're called sojourners and strangers and transients. We're all meant to be like blue mads with our Winnebagos, blue nomads and our Winnebagos going across northern Australia. We're just passing through. We're here for the experience. We know where we're going. There's a destination. There's something that we're heading to. The story's told of an American tourist, and he was visiting this great Polish rabbi in Europe, and this is in the 19th century. The rabbi's name was Hofetz Chaim. How's that for a great name? Hofetz Chaim. And so the American tourist walks into Hofetz's room, and there's hardly anything there, just a couple of books, you know, a Talmud, that's about it. And the American tourist said, "Rabbi, where are all your possessions?" And the rabbi looks at the American tourist and says, "Well, where of yours?" And he says, "Well, I'm just passing through." And the rabbi said, "So am I." And I love that story because for me, it communicates how we should be kind of hanging on or not hanging on to this life. It doesn't make this life any important. Actually, it makes this life even more important. King David, I think, so beautifully kind of sums this up. You know, he wanted to build the temple, but God says there's too much blood on your hands, but Solomon can build the temple. But David's going to get ready. He's going to get everything ready so he can give it to his son, and his son can then build the temple. And we read this in 1 Chronicles 29. David's saying, but who am I and who are my people that we should be able to give as generously as this? He's recognizing God gave him everything. Everything comes from you, and we've given you only what comes from your hand. We are foreigners. We are strangers in your sight, and as were all our ancestors. Our days on earth are like a shadow without hope. Lord our God, all this abundance that we have provided for building you a temple for your holy name comes from your hand, and it all belongs to you. And I just thought David sums up so beautifully how it is that we should be kind of passing through this life with our eyes firmly fixed on the future. Not that we're ever going to be so heavenly minded that we're no earthly good. That's not what we're called to be. We are called to be impacting in this life. We are called to live in such a way that people will see us and know that we belong to Christ. But they'll also know that we're just passing through. They'll know that, you know, we're not building this house or building this superannuation fund and that because we think we're here forever. All of those things are only to serve what God has called us to do. Billy Graham once said, heaven doesn't make this life less important, it makes it more important. And I think that's so true. If we live our lives as though we're just passing through with our faith firmly anchored in the future promises of God, then we're going to use our time, we're going to use our talents, we're going to use our gifts, and we're going to use our resources to make a difference in this life, in this world, because that's what we're called to do. Because our faith, when it's anchored in the future, it means that it doesn't mean we withdraw from the world around us. No, it means that we even engage even in a deeper and more meaningful way with the world around us because we know what's at stake. We got one hand on the plow, but we got one eye on the future because our heart is anchored in the promises of God, but also in the future promises of God. Faith works best when we take God at his word. Faith works best when our faith is firmly anchored in the future. And finally and quickly, faith works best when we believe for the impossible. Hallelujah. Is there anyone here believing for the impossible today? Because we're surrounded by things that are impossible. Hebrews 11, verses 11 to 12. And by faith, even Sarah, who was past childbearing age, was enabled to bear children because she considered him faithful who'd made the promise. She's 90. Her husband's 100. It just doesn't make sense. Sarah, that's impossible. You probably even haven't held hands for 30 years. I'm not going to go into details. I think you know how it happens. And so from this one man, and as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as countless as the sand on the seashore. It's going to take a miracle, Sarah. If you're going to have a baby, your husband's 100, you're 90. And initially, as I said, they stumbled. They stumbled. It's not happening. Well, we're going to help God. I've done that. It's not happening. I'm going to help God. I've probably left 3 or 4 jobs like that. Yeah, anyway. It doesn't work out. I think God loves it when we have faith in him for the impossible. I mean, it's so easy in our culture and our life, isn't it? We have so much. You know, we get sick, we go to the doctor. You know, we need money. There's money around. It's just a great country to live in. And Lord, we thank you for that. We don't want you to change that. We like it like it is in some ways. But I think when we start to believe for the impossible, you know, in Genesis 18, we see there where it's a great passage in Genesis where we just see the Lord visits Abraham. And then suddenly there's 3 people there. And so Abraham, in you know, Eastern hospitality, he kills a lamb, and he entertains them. He gives them food, he gives them bread, he gives them all of that. And one of the men says, "Where's your wife Sarah?" You know, he says, "When I come back next year, she's going to have a son." And then Sarah's sitting in the tent laughing. And why is Sarah laughing? I'm not laughing. It's really interesting that when she has Isaac, Isaac in Hebrew means laughter. So maybe it might have been prophetic. And then the angel says this to Sarah, or God says this to Sarah, is anything too hard for the Lord? This is the Lord speaking. Is anything too hard for the Lord? You know, he speaks that over our lives today. He speaks that over our lives, and maybe there's an impossible thing in your life. Maybe it's a child who's not walking with the Lord. You know, maybe it's someone who's battling sickness, long-term sickness. Can you believe God for the impossible? You know, maybe it's a financial situation or challenge that you've got. Can you believe God for the impossible? Because faith works best when we're believing for the impossible to become the possible. What is it in your life at the moment? And maybe it's a habit you can't break. Maybe it's something big. Maybe it is someone who doesn't know the Lord, or a health challenge, or finance, or business, or something like that. Is there something in your life where God can ask over your life today, is there anything too hard for the Lord? Because faith works best when we believe for the impossible. I want to encourage you to keep praying for whatever it is. Faith works best when we take God at his word. Faith works best when our faith is anchored in the future promises of God. And faith works best, you know, when we believe for the impossible. You know, I'm preparing this and I'm thinking, well, what are some of the impossible things in my life? Well, I want all my kids to be walking with the Lord. And I look at it and I think, how's that going to happen? And, you know, maybe, you know someone who makes the prodigal son look like an angel. Is anything too difficult for the Lord? You know, for me, I think of West End. And I was talking to Esther before about all the different church leaders and pastors I know who've come here, and they wanted to plant a church, and they said it's too hard because of parking and things like that. But I've got an impossible dream for West End. The only thing is I don't want to pay for it. I don't want to take a congregation into debt. But I see, like a community centre, where we're working with refugees and, you know, children and a whole lot of things. And, you know, I see at least three levels of underground parking, so there's no issues of parking anymore. You know, and I see us making money during the week on the car parking that's paying for the church. And I see hundreds of people from West End and the area coming into church. That's impossible. That just doesn't make sense. You know, you've got about $5 to your name. Is there anything too hard for the Lord? I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine whose nephew is a pastor in New Zealand. In Paul's church, they've been live streaming. And Paul has a large church. It's a massive church in Auckland, and do a lot with the homeless and young people throughout all of New Zealand. And he's live streaming, you know, everywhere, all around the world. But you know, he's having a bit of trouble. He's got the building. They're paying for it. COVID's it. And there's a guy in the States who's watching the live stream. The Lord wakes him up one night. You've got to give some money to that church in New Zealand. So he contacts him. I'm just depositing $14 million American dollars into your bank account. Is there anything too hard for the Lord? You know, I don't think anything is too hard for the Lord. You know, what is it in your life that's impossible? Because what I'd like to do this morning, and I'm going to ask Peter and Brenda, Maureen, Linda, I'll get you if you will. We're just going to pray for people. If you've got something, like I'm not in a hurry, if you have to go grab a coffee or a tea or something and do that, but I would love to spend some time praying for you. If there's something, you have a challenge, something that's really difficult in your life, and you want to hear the words of the Lord, is there anything too hard for the Lord over your situation and over your the thing that's coming against you? Well, we would love to pray that for you. So I'm going to ask Letitia and Kerry just to sing this song through a few times. So if you, Peter and Brenda, if you could come out, Linda, if you could come out, Maureen, and if you would like us to pray for something, please come out of your seat now, and we would love to do that right now. And if no one comes out, that's okay. We'll go and have tea and coffee as well.